welcome to the State of Florida Sports Podcast, presented by the USA Today Network. Here's your host, Tim Walters.
I can still hear Gorilla Monsoon's voice circa 1985. Pandemonium has broken loose. For a kid who grew up in the 80s, there was nothing like the type of wrestling that happened in that era. However, a new era of wrestling is thriving, and like in the 1990s, WWE has challengers. This time, though, it's AEW and Ring of Honor instead of WCW and ECW. Hello again, everybody. I'm Tim Walters, and today we talk all things professional wrestling on the State of Florida Sports Podcast, powered by the USA Today Network. This podcast utilizes our Florida Sports Network of beat writers, columnists, and some special guests to bring you up to speed on the most important sports topics. Our Florida network consists of 17 news sites that encompass the state. We encourage you to subscribe to your hometown newspaper, and of course, this podcast, to help support the incredible journalism done by our talented staffs. Today, I'm really excited to interview Ring of Honor's Maria Kanellis Bennett. Maria broke into professional wrestling as a contestant on the reality show Diva Search in 2004. She was signed by WWE and started her career in the ring in 2005. Since then, she's had a successful career in and out of the ring, including her previous stint at Ring of Honor from 2011 to 2015. She also happens to be married to professional wrestler Mike Bennett, also with Ring of Honor. Also joining me is wrestling connoisseur Ray Bisock, a sports reporter with the Lakeland Ledger. Ray has been with the Ledger for 10 years, writing columns covering high school sports, and at times, writing a regular wrestling column. Well, enough introductions, let's get to Maria. We're here with the multi-talented Maria Kanellis Bennett of Ring of Honor Wrestling. Maria, welcome to the State of Florida Sports Podcast. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. So, you rejoined Ring of Honor in December, and it's a company that you also had a previous affiliation with from 2011 to 15, so you're definitely familiar with them. What are you doing right now with the company? How can people get involved, and will we be seeing you back in the ring anytime soon?
So currently with Ring of Honor, I'm the producer of the women's division. I'm on the board of directors for Ring of Honor. I make sure that we have the very best female wrestlers competing right here in Ring of Honor. So it is something that I have wanted to do for a very long time. And so I'm incredibly excited about this tournament coming up. I will not be getting back in the ring. The last match that I had was actually at WrestleMania. And I think that's a very good way to go out in your career. So to do anything more than that seems rather silly. But I loved being able to compete in the ring with so many amazing competitors. That's just not what I'm interested in now.
Well, it looks like you and Ric Flair both got to go out at WrestleMania, so not a bad way to end your career. You're right.
I don't know if Flair is really out, though. And any wrestler, really, yeah. I don't know if they're out.
So we'll talk about the tournament in a minute, but I just wanted to, you know, ask you, you know, many people remember you from your beginnings way back in 2004, 2005. You've made a great career over 15 years, and the women's division, women's wrestling, has just evolved so greatly. You know, tell us a little bit about how you've seen that change, and do you see yourself as one of those pioneers, because you were there when Trish Stratus and Lita and yourself and others were really changing how people saw women's wrestling?
It's funny because, like, I don't really think of it as an evolution. I think of it more as like ebb and flow. There's been women's wrestling around since the early 1920s. Some of those women's wrestlers, they used to wrestle crocodiles and bears at the circus. So the ways that I've seen it change is, you know, there were main event matches by Trish and Lita. And then we went through a lull of because, you know, whatever way the company was viewing us, there weren't as long of matches for the women that I worked with. And then it started coming up again. So, I mean, but at the same time that we were having those very short matches over on Impact, they were having Awesome Kong and Gail Kim just tearing the house down and getting the highest ratings of any other wrestler on the show. So women's wrestling has always been there. It just so happens to be that WWE is the largest in the game. And so they are able to spread whatever narrative they have at the time. So I'm very excited that now in Ring of Honor, our spotlight is put on women's wrestling. And over the next few weeks, you're going to be able to see that.
Well, yeah, starting next week, Ring of Honor begins holding a tournament to crown a new women's champion. And the women's title has been dormant for a couple of years almost. Tell us a little bit about this tournament and what it means for the women of Ring of Honor.
So for a lot of women that were in the company when I came back, they were disheartened by all of it. They were disappointed because last year there was supposed to be this tournament that was going to crown a new women's champion, and it didn't happen. COVID, and you know, we were taken off the road. And so there just wasn't a place for it. And now as we ramp up towards it, everybody's incredibly excited, especially for the Ring of Honor originals, as I like to call them, like Sumi. This means a lot to them.
Yeah, speaking of the tournament, you know, the grand finale is going to be right here in Lakeland at Death Before Dishonor 18 at the RP Funding Center, September 12th. And, if you were handicapping the tournament, who are like two or the three favorites that might be around for the final?
Now, I can't do that because I am on the board. But what I can say is that there is a ton of fresh faces, women that have either never competed before in Ring of Honor or have only came in for a show or two. So some of those women are like a former NWA champion, Allison Kay. She's absolutely incredible. She's won titles. She knows how to perform on a big stage. So she's a really exciting one to watch. You have someone like Miranda Alizé, who has been wrestling for 9 years, but at the same time hasn't been able to perform on such a huge level. You've got someone like Alice Gracia, who has a huge fan following, but doesn't have as much experience. Someone like Willow, who's just now starting to really come up the ranks with her big smile and her big heart. And, you know, so there are so many women that I'm turning to watch, to see, like, what are they going to bring in this tournament? Is it going to be something that they've, you know, been able to pull out of themselves before? And can they compete on such a huge level?
So at Best in the World, though, we're talking about somebody that's in the tournament, right? Chelsea Green is in the hot mess.
She is not in the tournament. Okay. We could not clear her. So Maryland's athletic commission is a little bit tougher than the rest of the country. Anybody with a cast on cannot perform. Anybody that is a little loopy cannot perform. So because we are taping in a very difficult state to clear people, we cannot have her in the tournament. But she will be on commentary, and she will be able to kind of scout all of these girls. So if she ever does want to compete for the championship, or if she ever does want to compete for that number one contender spot, she can, and she will be prepared. When I originally talked to her, she was going to be in the tournament. Unfortunately, like wrestlers do, they get injured sometimes. And unfortunately, because of that injury, she couldn't compete, and she won't be able to compete in this tournament.
Well, you know, you mentioned how last year they would have held the tournament, but COVID halted it. You guys are now getting back on the road. You're getting out there. How is it, are things different? Have they changed protocols? And what's it just like getting back out there in front of fans and just traveling around?
So at our last pay-per-view, it was, to see fans back out there again. I was excited. I don't know, like, if people could tell when they were watching it, but I definitely could tell. I was just so excited to be back in front of fans. Ring of Honor has always had just a rabid fan base where they just they're there to enjoy amazing wrestling. And being back out there again in front of fans was incredible. Yes, the protocols are changing. and we are getting there in a very measured way. I think it's incredibly smart the way that they've done things to bring fans back in, to make them feel, you know, like they're VIPs with our company. So for me, I can't wait until we're on a full schedule with full capacity, and we'll get there for sure.
Well, as great as the performers are, there's just nothing that kind of gives you that jolt of energy like hearing that crowd, is there?
Yeah, I mean, the crowd is amazing.
You've been ringside for a lot of incredible moments in your husband's career and your career, obviously. Is there a match that sticks out for you more than others that you've been in or you've been ringside with for? Because I know you've been all over the world, and Japan had to been maybe at the top of the list there. So.
Yeah, I mean, when the guys won the IWGP tag titles in Japan, just that feeling of accomplishment, because my husband was always told he was never going to be able to go to Japan. He's been told he's not going to be able to do a lot of things, but he still seems to accomplish them. And, you know, he was always told that he wasn't a great wrestler, but he went in there with Jonathan Gresham last weekend, and he proved that he can be in the pure division and hold his own. So I think that every time those kind of moments happen, those moments of gratification that you're actually doing the right thing, even if it's not what the fans necessarily believe you can do, those are the moments that really stick with me, because the fans, after they realize, oh my gosh, you just proved me wrong, they become fans for life, and that's exciting.
You know, we mentioned that you broke into wrestling in 2004, so let's go back a little bit before that. At what period of your life did you say, I'm going to get into wrestling, and I'm going to kick everyone's ass until I get to the top?
I don't think there was ever a point in my entire career or entire life that I ever said that. I was a bikini model. I was doing the bikini modeling circuit for Hawaiian Tropics, and I was a huge wrestling fan. And I loved what Jonathan Coachman was doing with The Rock, and I wanted to be Jonathan Coachman. I just thought that their banter back and forth was amazing. And so for me, I came in as an interviewer, and somehow, you know, the wrestling itch got to me to where I started training. I was never great, but I started training. And, you know, I ended up having a lot of great competitors that I was in the ring with. I see a lot of myself in Quinn McKay, except Quinn is so much more athletic than me. And I think the world of her. I think she's going to have an amazing wrestling career alongside her interviewing career.
Now you can just get past the allure there. We'd be fine.
Well, I've got quite a big announcement coming up this week, and I think it might, I'll just say it might put the allure in its place a little bit.
Can't wait to see it. That could be on YouTube.
It will be, yes. And awesome. Probably on all socials as well.
Awesome.
So how difficult has it been? You have two small children, you know, traveling around, you know, taking care of your kids, being a part of wrestling. How do you balance everything?
So I always look at the women that are much greater and doing a lot more than me and able to seem to, you never balance it. You just do it. Shonda Rhimes has this great quote where she talks about how either she's failing at being a mother or she's failing at her job. You're always failing. So I like to think about it that way, because it places a much finer point on it than, you know, how do you balance it? It's just, you never do. You're always failing just a little bit. And I think that knowing that and moving forward, I just can do the best that I can do. And I love being in the position that I am right now, because no one's ever held it before. It's something I dreamed about for my entire career. I always wanted to fight for women. I grew up in a Greek household where the woman would stay in the kitchen and the man runs the house. And now my my life is completely turned upside down to where I am producing a women's division and I'm able to be a mother and I'm able to have an amazing husband. And it's all because of my support system. And my mother is currently at my house watching my two beautiful babies. And so I can have this crazy job. And I have an incredibly supportive husband as well. So I'm hoping that there will be many more women that are just like me in this industry. And we're able to inspire the next generation.
You know, speaking of, you know, saying how supportive Mike has been for you, I think you've been equally as important to him in everything he's been through with his battles against sobriety, with against pain medication and everything. Just talk about your journey and his journey through all this. I mean, I know he's come a long way, and you guys have just been so much. You know, you've both grown through this whole thing through this.
Yeah, I mean, Mike told me that he had a pain pill addiction at the Mae Young Classic. We were in Florida, and a lot of things have happened in Florida. It's very funny. I don't know if funny is the right word. It's ironic. But so he told me that he had this drug addiction and it had been going on for 4.5 years. And I didn't know. I knew something was bothering him, but I didn't know what had been going on. He had hit it so well. And I think that's the thing with people that have addictions and have problems with sobriety. Like, you never know. It's not necessarily the people that you would think have issues. There's a lot of people that do. And, you know, I know a lot of people like to give WWE credit for him going through their program, but he never did. He didn't even tell them for a month and a half after he told me. I was his recovery. I was his therapy. We were in the Lowe's Sapphire Hotel in Florida, and I had him basically locked in his hotel room for several days because he was worried he was going to die. And, you know, he had to go to the emergency room and get a patch, and you can actually see it in that match with Sammy. And, you know, it was a crazy week because he hadn't wrestled on WWE yet, but in his first match, he was 3 days from recovery. And, you know, every time somebody says, oh, well, WWE helped him. No, they never offered help. And, it was me. So if you want to pat someone on the back, you should pat me on the back because I was the one that was there making sure he didn't die in that hotel room. And then after that, he continued on the road with WWE. And 2 weeks after I found out about his drug addiction is when I found out I was pregnant. And at that point, we didn't even think we could get pregnant. We thought like we were actually going to start talking to fertility experts because we had tried for a year and then we had stopped, but it had been because of his drug addiction. So it was a crazy time. And I feel like we haven't been able to get on just like any bit of normalcy since that moment, because it was like, he was going through recovery. He was on the road full time, calling me and checking in every hour or so. And then after that, we found out I was pregnant, and then he was still checking in with me, had baby number one. Like, it was a wild time, but I have to say that like through all of it, it's just made us stronger. And it really proved that no matter how crazy it is, you can do it. You just have to put one foot in front of the other every day.
You know, it's weird. You know, the theme song WWE gave you guys, with the greatest love. It kind of circled back around into, you know, I know you, when you guys were released, I guess, but you know, that kind of circled back around into this, you know, the strengthening of your guys' bond. But when WWE released you guys, did you feel like almost a sigh of relief almost? And, you know, I mean, because you guys were kind of used in a way maybe a lot of people that were fans of yours were like, you know, that's not a great use of their talents.
Yeah. I mean, so Mike did, I didn't. I was only 2 months postpartum. And WWE knew that we were going to have a second baby. We had talked about it. We signed our contract with them, having full knowledge, at least the talent relations side. So talent relations may not have told Vince McMahon, but I know talent relations knew. So for me, only being 2 months postpartum, I was like, well, crap, I wanted to finish the rest of my career out in WWE. I wanted to become a backstage producer. I mean, Paul Heyman was trying to get me to be either his assistant or an assistant down in NXT. So like, I knew that was going to be the trajectory of my career. But for Mike, he wanted out. And so he wanted out, but not in that way. I mean, to be released in a pandemic when there's no work and nobody's running shows. Yeah, nobody wants to be released that way. Because we're independent contractors. So because we're independent contractors, we didn't get any of the benefits that regular employees would normally get throughout this pandemic. So luckily we had a little bit of money saved because of our last contract that we had been under for only about 6 months. Because of that, we were able to find our way through. I wouldn't say relieved would be the term for me. For Mike, I think now he's incredibly relieved and he's exactly where he's supposed to be in Ring of Honor. But at the time, that was a bit of a mess.
So, Maria, before we go, I did want to circle back to Ring of Honor right now because there's so many great things going on in Ring of Honor. Just it's getting bigger. The production's just better and better. You're getting more known names. So just, you know, for people who maybe haven't checked out Ring of Honor, who are some of your favorites to watch right now, performers in the ring, people that just kind of like leap off the page that fans should know?
You know, I think that Ring of Honor is... it's at the peak of wrestling right now. That's what we do best. And some of those wrestlers like Jonathan Gresham and Rhett, and Tracy, like their wrestling is fantastic. You've got Josh Woods and, you've got Flip, and these guys are just incredible in the ring. I would not want to face them, at any time in my life. They're just incredible in the ring. And then you also have people like EC3 and the Briscoes, and that bring a totally different energy and a vibe. Then you have Shane, and our tag division just seems to be ramping up again. So like, there are so many incredible wrestlers in the company that I absolutely love watching. I can't believe I get to be a part of such a fantastic company. And then, of course, now we have the women's side. And between having the allure there, even though they don't know how to follow the rules, and you got Sumi, and you have Allison Kay in this tournament, and Marty Bell, and Holodead, and you have Nicole Savoy, which everybody is clamoring to see back in a Ring of Honor ring. And you've got Alex Gracie, you've got Willow, and Max, who terrifies me.
She's one of my favorites.
She's terrifying. And then you've got Miranda and Roxy, who is the prodigy, the youngest one we have in the tournament. And these incredible matchups that you're going to be able to see. Yeah, it's going to be an amazing tournament. I can't wait till it gets started. I can't wait for everybody to see all the hard work that's been put in by everyone that has worked on this division. Yeah, I mean, you're really going to be in for a treat. And yeah, thank you for giving me the time.
Yeah, no problem. Is there anything else you want to convey or at least tell fans where they can find you, where they can stream you, where they can watch you, listen to you, get, you know, let us know everywhere that we can find Ring of Honor and what's going on with you guys.
Of course. So this Wednesday, on Women's Division Wednesday, we will be holding a round table, and the tournament competitors, some of the tournament competitors, are going to be able to have a discussion about what it means to be in this amazing Quest for Gold tournament. Next week, we're doing the same thing on Women's Division Wednesday. If you want to catch most of the athletes that will be competing in this tournament, you can watch them on YouTube, on the Ring of Honor channel, on Women's Division Wednesday. There's a little bit of a special surprise on Women's Division Wednesday over the next couple weeks that I'm very excited and proud of. You can follow Ring of Honor on their Twitter page and also on their Instagram. You can follow me on Maria L. Canellis on Twitter and Maria Canellis on Instagram. So there's a lot of different places to follow us. I'm very excited about this tournament. I'm very excited about keeping Women's Division Wednesday going. And again, thank you guys for the time.
No problem at all. Thank you so much, Maria, and best of luck and have a great tournament.
Thank you so much. All right. Bye.
That was a great interview, Ray. It sounds like she's doing some great things and Ring of Honor is doing really well.
Oh, most definitely. She's always been fun to watch, even when she was in WWE. Also, her and her husband are really talented people. So it's glad to see she's landed very, very well. She's doing great.
Yeah, it's amazing to think almost 20 years ago, she's just in a modeling career, you know, kind of accidentally gets into wrestling. And now she's, you know, basically an executive and helping shape the women's division. So that's really cool.
Yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of WWE wrestlers now have kind of had that track. I mean, Alexa Bliss used to be a cheering competitor. So, I mean, and now she's at the top of the women's roster. So
let's segue to some other things having to do with the world of professional wrestling, because there's so much going on right now. All the major wrestling promotions are hitting the road for the first time since the pandemic, which Maria actually touched on. And I recently heard AEW owner Tony Khan say none of his wrestlers ever got COVID, which is pretty amazing. Are shows different than they were before the pandemic at the other wrestling promotions, or are things back to a so-called normal? What are you seeing?
Well, since the WWE actually just got back to live audiences this past Friday with SmackDown, and then this past Sunday with their pay-per-view Money in the Bank and Monday Night Raw, you know, it's like they never left in a lot of ways, because, I mean, they're going full capacity right now with these shows. But, you know, some promotions are still taking it easy. I mean, Ring of Honor only had 300 at their Best in the World pay-per-view, but the 300 that were there were very vocal, and you could hear every one of them. AEW has been doing live, having fans back in the arena up in Jacksonville for a little bit longer now. They were all spaced out and everything still, but they're starting to get back, and they're back on the road again. They have full capacity crowds also. So, I mean, it's great to see, you know. Obviously want everybody to be safe out there still, because unfortunately there's still a rise going on in the state of Florida. But you know, it's just great to see. I mean, it's a live wrestling crowd when it pops, like when John Cena came back at Money in the Bank on Sunday, it'll give you goosebumps, even if you're just sitting in front of the TV screen. So
absolutely, I fully agree. And, you know, seeing a show in person, there is just nothing like going to a wrestling show. You know, both of us, before we were journalists, we were wrestling fans, you know. So do you have a live experience where you went as a fan, or even if you were covering a wrestling event as a journalist, do you have one event from a certain event that really sticks out to you?
Well, I have to tell the story because it's so incredibly out there. It was an Extreme Championship Wrestling, ECW, when the Dudley Boys were at their height of their reign of terror, basically, in ECW. I would get front row seats to ECW house shows in Tampa, at the Tampa Fairgrounds, I think out in Zephyr Hills. I used to make signs for Bubba Ray Dudley, telling him that he wasn't a very good wrestler and not a very good heel. The first time I took a sign out there for him, front row, he took that sign from me, rolled it up, and hit me and my friends in the head with it. The next night we were in Kissimmee, I did another sign. He took it, did the same thing. The next time they came back in Tampa, my brother was holding the sign this time, and he tried to grab it, and my brother made him miss, and he spit in my face.
Oh my goodness.
And he pie-faced me where my glasses went three rows back. Now, the Dudley, especially Bubba Ray at the time, was known for trying to get people kicked out of the audience. Because, you know, in true heel fashion, which he was, and he is still one of the greatest heels to ever walk down to a wrestling ring. He wanted me to, you know, push him or something so I get thrown out. So I pay good money. He, obviously being spat on is not a good thing. But my friend Chuck, hopefully he'll listen to this coming up here. But he got a few spits in on Bubba Ray Dudley too. So we didn't get kicked out, but that was one of the most memorable ones, to say the least. That and Taz landing in my lap during the main event. Going over the guardrail was interesting also.
Well, while my stories aren't quite that, I'm not even sure what you'd call that, disturbing.
Yeah.
I'm
a lucky guy because he's done worse to people, so.
Yeah, way back in April of 1999, my buddy and I, we were able to sit ringside for a Monday Nitro show on the University of Florida campus in Gainesville when we were students there, and I had a sign that had the four fingers, like the four horsemen, and they were inside a gator's mouth, and it said Gators Chomp Horsemen, and it was in orange and blue lettering. And the first match, the opening match of the show, just kicks off with Chris Benoit coming out and the Four Horsemen music hitting, and the camera panned right to me and my sign. So I was literally on the opener of the Monday Nitro show opening, and I still have that on VHS, believe it or not, me as a, you know, a 21, 22-year-old kid going, woo, holding up my sign. So that was always one big thrill. The other one was we got ringside seats in 2016. For the Royal Rumble in Orlando, and we were right behind the Spanish announce table, and when we took our seats, I was like, oh, I'm wearing the best seat in the house. That guy's going to end up in the crowd with us. And sure enough, Roman Reigns is getting beat up by Rusev and several other guys, and they laid him on the Spanish announce table, and the announcer jumps into the crowd, and I have a picture of him next to my wife and my buddy as they drove Roman Reigns through the table. So it was fantastic.
Yeah, when those moments happen, I mean, like I said, when Taz ended up in my lap, I was looking the other way and he came over. Like, I didn't expect him to come over here. He was wrestling Tajiri at the time, and he ends up in my lap. And the first thing he says something to me, and he goes, "Move, brother." So everybody got, you know, pushed everybody back, you know, and Tajiri does an acai moonsault off the second rope over the guardrail onto Taz right in front of us.
Yeah, the ECW, they were as crazy acrobatic and throwing their bodies to the wind as I've still never quite seen anything like that, because those guys were, I mean, they were brutalizing each other. It was incredible.
Yeah, that was some of my favorite memories of going there with my friend Chuck and my brother and, you know, like I said, but, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning, Friday night, the weekend, kicking off the weekend with ECW on Sunshine Network, that was, you know, That's what we did.
Yeah.
Well, you know, every era thinks that they're the best era in wrestling. But if you were to pick a decade, whether it be the 70s, 80s, 90s, you know, the first decade of the 2000s, what has been your favorite decade of wrestling?
I mean, I was born in 78, so I didn't get, you know, the 70s are out. The 80s, I mean, yeah, Hulk Hogan, you know, that era got me into it. But it was the 90s, man, because the mid-90s, especially, when you had the rise of the NWO, you know, for life. You know, you had Stone Cold Steve Austin and, you know, The Rock and, you know, just The Undertaker, Kane, Shawn Michaels, DX. And those guys, some of those guys are still going. The Undertaker just retired. But, you know, some of those guys are still doing things in the ring. But it's amazing that era right there produced so many stars. And it just, it was such a part of my youth that I'll never forget, because it's just so many shirts I bought. I went to so many Raws and, you know, Nitros, and it was just the 90s, the WWE Attitude Era was it. So.
Yeah, I would probably have to say that I go with it. You know, I'm around the same age as you, born 1977. I remember Hulk Hogan beating Iron Sheik for the title, and it seemed like the biggest thing in the world happening. So I still lean a little bit toward the 80s. you know, love the Ultimate Warrior and the Macho Man, but you're right, that mid to late 90s where you had the true wrestling wars, I mean, that was just so cool because WWE, they really had to kind of step up their game as all of their old guard went to WCW and kind of mixed with guys like Goldberg and, you know, some of the ECW stars that rose up and went to WCW. So you're right, I think that mid to late 90s, and you had Stone Cold Steve Austin, of course, and The Rock and all that. So it was just, it was a wonderful time. And, you know, my next question, you know, I guess, do you see right now as being similar to like it was in 99 when you had ECW, WCW, WWE? Now you have WWE, AEW, Ring of Honor. It's like there's so much wrestling and they're all really popular.
Well, no, because the WWE is not, they're at that attitude era is, they're in a PG era now where they're not going to do the risque stuff right now because they don't really feel threatened by AEW, even though AEW is outdrawing them in the ratings. But the other thing is AEW and WWE programming don't go against each other that much now. You have Monday Night Raw, and actually, hold on, actually AEW just switched to a Friday show against up against SmackDown too. So I haven't looked at the ratings for that, but you know, nothing's ever going to compare to the Attitude Era, or it's WCW versus or WWE versus WCW. I mean, the Monday Night Wars. There's a huge documentary on the WWE Network about that, and it's for a reason, and it's still compelling television, even though you've probably seen every episode of Raw at that date, every episode of Nitro. So I'm one that had I would record Raw for a while and watch Nitro live, and then when Raw got better, I'd start recording Nitro and watch Raw. So.
And of course, there was Eric Bischoff knowing that they were live and Raw wasn't, so he'd give away the ending. That was pretty mean.
Yeah, I have a particular bone about that one. He ruined the Mick Foley title win for me, so.
Well, you know, I've covered a lot of wrestling in my time. I think, you know, my favorite moment I can think of was in 2000, I think it was 2013 in Melbourne, Florida at the Melbourne Auditorium. Ric Flair was there promoting his daughter Charlotte, who was just coming up in NXT. And after the show, I had requested an interview with Rick. And so the show ends, and apparently they eat after the show. And then he did a stand-up interview with me and his daughter on camera. And then he also did a little bit of a further interview for print. And he was just so nice and so gracious. But I was dressed in like a long-sleeve shirt. But under it, I had my WrestleMania shirt from his final match in 2008. And so as the interview finished and I turned the camera off, I started unbuttoning my shirt and I said, Rick, I know this is going to sound strange. I'm wearing the WrestleMania shirt from Orlando 2008, your last match. Would you sign your name on your picture over my shoulder and across my entire back? He wrote Ric Flair 16 times. It's the only time in 24 years in this business where I've actually asked someone I've interviewed for their autograph, which usually as a journalist you don't do, but that was the one time.
I don't blame you. It's kind of hard not to ask some of the guys, or some of the guys you looked up as heroes, you know, when you were a kid for an autograph. So I don't blame you at all.
Well, who was maybe one of your favorite people to interview?
Oh man, well I have a very interesting one. I have been inside the walls of Jericho. Now, what that means, I've actually been inside Chris Jericho's house. I got to interview him while he was getting his episode of Tanked, from Animal Planet, where they put it custom fish tanks in people's houses.
Oh, I love that show.
Yeah, it's an amazing show. It's just really interesting what they were able to do. And, I got to interview him in his house. I got to meet his wife. I saw his kids. I didn't talk to his kids, but I got to pet one of his dogs, his golden retriever, his elderly golden retriever. And I was nervous as all get out because this is Chris Jericho. I mean, this is, you know, the Ayatollah of rock and roll, you know. I got through the interview and I said afterwards, you know, I said, first of all, thank you. You know, I want to thank you for letting us inside your house. I know it's so hectic today. And thank you for providing me with a lot of entertainment over the years as a fan. I want to thank you for that. And he was very gracious about it and, you know, thanked me for being a fan. And, you know, so. But, yeah, I was a little nervous on that one. That was a little crazy.
Yeah, oh, I bet. You know, and Jericho, it's amazing to see his growth through the business, too. And boy, AEW really struck gold by getting him to come over there because he's done great things. I think he probably learned a lot from the McMahons and Triple H, and I think he does a great job over there. So that's really cool. So but before we close out, Ray, just a couple of more questions. A couple of weeks ago on this podcast, I gave my top five favorite wrestlers of all time, and they had a hardcore 80s slant, of course. From 5 to 1, it was the Macho Man Randy Savage, The Ultimate Warrior, Andre the Giant, Hulk Hogan, and of course, my man, number one, woo, Ric Flair. So, who do you put in your top five?
All right, so if we're going, I'm gonna go 5 to 1. Okay, so number five would be The Undertaker. There is nothing like his entrance live. It is just an amazing thing to behold, and it's like the whole arena gets colder. It's weird. It's totally weird. Number four would be The Rock. I mean, how could you not grow up in the 90s and not be a Rock fan? I mean, that's just he was just amazing. Number three would be Triple H. I mean, he's done more things, and this is also going into what he's done with NXT also. I mean, he's done so much for the business. A lot of people don't like him, you know, or didn't like him at the time, but he's probably going to be, if Vince ever dies or gives up the goat or gives up control, he's probably going to be in control of WWE, and a lot of people are wanting that. So number two would be Stone Cold, because Stone Cold Steve Austin, I mean, how can you not? Again, you know, you gotta have a list there. And number one is my man, Mick Foley, Cactus Jack, Dude Love, Mankind, all three faces of Foley, loved them all. When he went off the top of the Hell in the Cell in 1998 against The Undertaker, me and my friend Chuck and my friend Brian were sitting on my dad's couch, and we all jumped up, and my dad distinctly yelled at us, "You're going to buy me another couch." we broke it. But we, all three of us, just jumped up when he went off that top of that cell. And he's always been some. I got to meet him once, and he's just a genuinely nice guy. He really, really is. I can't say enough about him.
And nobody could get a crowd pop by saying the city they were in like Mick Foley.
Yes, the cheap pop. Yes, right here in Lakeland, Florida, with the cheesy thumbs up and everything. So, yes.
And who's your favorite announce team? I think I go back to Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby the Brain Heenan. They worked so well off of each other. And then a side shout out to Mean Gene, who was more like the sideline reporter, one of the best promo men in the business. Who do you go with?
Yeah, see, I had to go with you a little bit on Gorilla and Bobby and Bobby the Brain, because, you know, the way they worked with each other was so awesome. But man, I like to have a new guy on there. Mauro Ranallo, what he did with NXT, yeah, oh, Mamma Mia, you know, I can't do that right for him. I can't do that justice. But what he does, or what he did with NXT while he was there, was just some of the best announcing and over the top stuff. But it was solid gold, and he made every one of those matches that he called special by calling them that way. And he is missed to this day on NXT programming. I can guarantee you that. So.
Well, Ray, we've had a lot of fun. Is there anything else you want to convey to the audience, or, you know, tell people where they can find you and your work?
I'm going to be starting up my wrestling column again here soon at with the Ledger in Lakeland. You can find me on Twitter at it's BSOC, it's underscore BSOC, R squared also on there is my nickname. I tell you what, there's one thing we didn't talk about real quick, but if there's one person you guys were going to want to check out, if you get to the show in Lakeland on September 12th, Death Before Dishonor, if he's not there, I'm going to be very upset because I'm plugging him. Shane Taylor is somebody you need to watch out for. This guy's been in Ring of Honor for a while. He's tagged with Keith Lee. He is part of the six-man champions right now. He is somebody that has grown into a role that is just phenomenal. So if you haven't looked at him yet, please do, because he will captivate you in a way I don't think you're going to be able to, you know, he's just an amazing worker. So
And his physicality, the 6'1", 320 or so pounds. I mean, that dude, that is somebody I would not want angry at me.
Yeah, and like I said, if you ever have a chance to look into his backstory, you understand why, so.
Absolutely, and anyone who wants to read about that, just go to your favorite search engine, type in Ray Beasock, B-E-A-S-O-C-K, and Shane Taylor, and you'll find a great column about that. Ray, again, thanks for joining me.
Oh, thank you for having me. Anytime you want to talk about wrestling, I'm your man.
Oh, I could definitely do that all day. And thank you, the listeners, for coming back week after week as our podcast listening family continues to grow. I'm Tim Walters, and I'll close out today with two of my favorite wrestling quotes. First, from the incomparable Jesse the Body Ventura, "Win if you can, lose if you must, but always cheat." And then to quote the stylin', profiling, limousine riding, jet flying, kiss stealing, woo wheeling and dealing, son of a gun Ric Flair, "To be the man, you gotta beat the man." Woo! We'll see you next time.